Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty.
Yes, I'm here.
Sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan. Or is it a state of mind? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Monday, and it is the 5th of September in the year 2005. Today is Labor Day, and I guess that's to celebrate the energy output of all of us worker bees here, Labor Day. And I hope that you've had a nice weekend, ladies and gentlemen. Let me begin here with our spiritual message. And we'll bring our guest up. We have a new guest with us tonight on the air, which will be a surprise to so many of you. Here we are. Our spiritual message tonight is from John, 1 John, chapter 4. And we'll start with verse 7, ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. And in verse 7, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loves is born of God and knows God. He that loves not knows not God, for God is love. And our guest this evening, ladies and gentlemen, is Julia Womack and her husband, Sid. Sid is standing by. Julia is our guest tonight. They live in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I thought that it would be relevant to talk to somebody who has firsthand eyewitness account of what is happening in Louisiana. Baton Rouge is about, what, 50 miles, Julia?
We're about 70 miles.
About 70 miles. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for being so gracious to be with us tonight, Julia.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Well, you and Sid have probably been watching the news. And what my interest is, and I believe that our listeners' interest would be, is what is happening outside of or alongside of what the news is telling us.
Well, first of all, Baton Rouge has now become the fastest growing city in the country, I believe. We're just about doubled in our population now.
What was your population, honey?
Well, the greater Baton Rouge area, we were a little over 250 to a half million people if you count the outlying areas.
Okay.
Certainly.
Julia, can you speak up just a little bit, please?
I'll try.
Oh, God. Thank you. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Okay.
And now you're looking at close to a half a million people?
Or more. Which really puts a big stress on our own infrastructure here in our town. You know, we have to help, and we will help. The hardest thing we've done so far, for me personally, is to try to help people find a place to live. Again, these people are out of money. They're out of food. It's hard to buy gasoline for them when you don't have any money. Some of the gas stations and some of the restaurants are not able to use credit cards because the satellite systems have been down.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. And so it's really very taxing. I can't even imagine, I can't fathom the stress that these people are under.
So where are they staying, Julia?
Well, we have a... They have fled out of state. A lot of people have gone as far as you can imagine, but a lot of people are still over in Houston, Dallas, as far up as into Arkansas. Go ahead.
The people that are in Baton Rouge,
they
just left because they had to get out of there, and there's no place for them to stay?
Right.
Or were they brought?
Well, we do.
Go ahead.
They were brought, and we do have some places now. We do have shelters in place. However, Jackie, we have to remember that a lot of these people, for instance, the people who were in the Superdome, a lot of those people were put in buses, and these buses started out, and they dropped off what they could, for instance, in different parts, and some of them went over to Houston, and let's face it, when you have buses, you have family members who are in one bus and other family members in another bus, and when they dropped off the capacity in one area, the other bus went on to another area, and we have families who are displaced from each other. I was watching Dr. Phil on TV last night. I believe he was in Dallas. And someone asked him, well, don't these people need counseling? And he said, well, maybe at some point. None of the counseling is going to help these people until they get placed in a home. They're hungry, they're tired, they're dirty, and they can't find their family members.
I heard on CNN they were interviewing, maybe it was a FEMA person, but maybe it was just somebody, one of the people. But evidently, what I understand is that FEMA has actually been turning buses back, not allowing buses come in to take people out, or at least they were initially. And they said, this was on CNN, whether it's true or not, I don't know, that a woman was holding a two-month-old baby in her arms. The bus was full. She couldn't get on. Her baby was dehydrated and dying, and she handed her two-month-old baby to a stranger and said, please take my baby, and please take care of him. And the woman promised that she would, and the woman who gave her baby to this lady, will they ever find each other again?
I don't see how. I just don't see how they will ever get back together.
Julia, what are the people saying? What are their feelings, their thoughts about what has been going on, about the ineptitude that, of course, that's all contrived. You know that, don't you?
Absolutely.
Thank you. That everything that is going on is part of a very, very well thought out plan and a long laid plan. But what do the people who don't really know this, what are they saying, honey?
Well, of course, everyone wants to try to find somebody to blame. I can't see that a disaster like this could really be anyone's fault. No more than those people who had to flee from the towers in New York City. It was not their fault. They could never have planned for anything like that, as far as normal citizens are concerned. I think that locally, from the top to the bottom, did a good job. I think that the middle crumbled. With Homeland Security over FEMA, no one had really any experience to take care of anything like this. For instance, you have the head of FEMA, Mr. Brown, who was an Arabian horse trainer at one time. Do you think maybe he might have gone to night school to get qualified for his FEMA job?
Wow. Who is this? Who are we talking? Oh, that's in Louisiana.
We're talking about
the Louisiana.
Mike Brown.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's an Arabian?
No, I said he was an Arabian
horse
trainer. Oh,
he's an Arabian horse trainer. Okay. Mike Brown. Well, Julia,
yeah.
We haven't talked. I know that you and Sid listened to the broadcast, and I believe that you've had conversation with Alan Watt. Are you,
yes.
Are you aware of the, I would say fact without being able to prove it, that the hurricane was a very well-placed storm using weather modification technology, and that it was that they knew it was coming, and the breaking of the dike in the nighttime after the storm had already abated. When I heard that, I knew without being able to prove it that the dike was exploded, was man manipulated to fail. So when we say it's nobody's fault, we have to know that there are forces behind it that have been pushing this and orchestrating and manipulating and intentionally not giving sustenance to the people who've been trapped there, etc.
Right. Well, I of course, I'm like you. We can never prove this. We can know it in our heart of hearts that some of these things have been planned. And when I meant that it was no one's fault, I really mean by the everyday person on the street.
All right.
We can make our preparations, and even those of us who have ideas that other things will happen, we can only prepare so far. And then we're kind of on our own. The government is not our friend. Okay.
And it is not our government.
And if these people don't believe it, they'll be there not to visit them also.
Say that again.
I said if other people don't believe it, just wait. They'll be your way one of these days.
Yeah.
And you'll expect it, and you'll wait, and you'll wait, and it's not going to be there.
Right. So
we have a lot of heroes, though, in all of these things. We have seen some stories of some older guys staying down in these projects, and they've taken it on themselves to go in and chop big holes in the attics and in the roof, go down in there and pull bodies out and pull people out and take these bodies to dry land. Jackie, we've heard some awful, awful stories of what's going on down there.
Are you when you say bodies, you're talking about dead bodies?
Oh, yes, yes. I have a personal friend who went to New Orleans day before yesterday. He took two of his young sons with him, and young by being 16 and 17. And he said he went down there with two young boys and came back with two young men, that they had been totally changed for a lifetime after seeing bodies stacked up on the side of the interstate like sandbags.
Julia, are the people aware that, the news, the mainstream news, has been flaunting it, if you would, in the faces of the American people watching this on the news? They stood back. They had, in Baton Rouge, I understand, they had New York Police Department, sheriffs, they had National Guard waiting with trucks loaded with water and food, and nobody giving them their instructions to go ahead and move, so they stood around. And the helicopters that could have been dropping food and water for these people that have been stranded, and the helicopters weren't there. And now the military is there with their guns drawn, waiting to shoot people. My question, if you have a sense of this, is what do the people understand that this is not an accident, that it is...
No, I don't think they have a clue.
Oh, God.
I think they are totally clueless.
Oh, God. Of course, when you're in that, when you're part of it, your thought process is probably not working. It's just an instinct instinctive will to survive, so to speak.
Right.
But what we're seeing on the news is so blatant.
Yes, it is. But we have people, I mean, people can't just stand there with blinders on. We have a lot of the local policemen are letting people know, hey, you can't let your guard down, because no matter what you're being told on TV, that things are okay, things are running smooth, they definitely are not, that you have to get out there and you have to protect your own self. For instance, I got some statistics on gun sales that in one store in particular, their average daily sales on guns were 15. Their average gun sale now is 1,000 a day.
Wow.
The citizens have got to protect themselves.
Well, that's good news. And of course, but you know what my question is here? When these people were dispossessed, if you would, that's, I understand that's the word that FEMA is using, or NATO or whatever. But if you're in your home and suddenly this flood is coming, they can't use their credit cards because the machines are down. They didn't remember to get their wallet or their purse because they were fighting to save their lives. Who's buying guns?
Well, we have a great population that left that whole South Louisiana area, though, before. We have to remember that.
Okay.
You know, people were starting to leave there 3, 4, 5 days at a time. And these are the people, most people who left, you know, were more prepared than those that lagged behind time. Those who left on the last day certainly weren't as prepared as those who left 3 days ahead of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I won't say that you can't use a credit card, okay, to get your gas. We've only had one experience where we had to pay cash for our gas because the satellites were down. So I don't want to paint a picture that is not true.
Well, are we talking Baton Rouge?
Right.
Okay.
Now, we have seen some signs today that they would not take a check from anyone from New Orleans. And I can understand that. A local person who's in business, you know, they have to have a living. They have to make a living. And they can't just go around taking bad checks from people. They don't even know. I have a lot of businessmen are really concerned now out of New Orleans. When they go into these banks that are supposed to open up tomorrow morning, how much money are they going to be able to get? Are the banks just going to let them know that they can have maybe $5,000 to $20,000, and they're going to have to sit back and wait for the rest of their money? They're very concerned about that. Did I lose you?
No, I'm listening.
Okay.
No, I'm listening intently.
Okay.
And of course,
yeah, they are really fearing that the banks may be holding money.
So if somebody came in to a store, not, you know, like to buy non-essentials, but let's say they, what about the grocery stores? What about restaurants? Are they realizing that there are people there without any means to sustain themselves regarding money? Are they saying sorry, or are they coming?
No, I don't think so, Jackie. I think that we are a very, very friendly area. I don't see anyone around here turning people away who are hungry. I really don't. I will say that something good has come out of all of this, and that you're always afraid of about price gouging, and even though we know that some people probably will, we're happy to report that our gasoline prices have stayed the same. We were afraid, and we had heard even before this storm, that gas prices were going to go up substantially last week, and the gas prices here are the very same as they were before this started.
What are your prices right there now?
I paid $2.46 for regular this morning.
Oh, my.
246, 256, and 266.
Well, I...
So, as bad as that is, it is not three.
Listen to this, Julia. I topped my tank off a couple days ago. I put 6.9 gallons in it, and it cost me $24. The gas here, at least 2 days ago, was at $3.45 a gallon for mid-grade.
Well, I don't think it. They could have stood the press if they had started raising gas prices with the situation that we were in. And I do think that we have a lot to be thankful for in this. We have had some, for instance, some New York City firefighters and other people out of New York coming here to help.
Uh-huh.
We are very, very thankful. We have our local firefighters and policemen. Even though they have gone woefully unattended and, you know, people forgetting that these guys all also have to be fed and cleaned up and take a little nap every once in a while, our local people have really taken in the police, fed them, washed their clothes, run errands for them. You know, people have come together and to help to attend to things that they need to take care of.
Uh-huh.
In other words, the little everyday guy is taking care of things.
And what do you hear about what's going on in New Orleans?
Well, the only thing that I hear that's going on in New Orleans, other than Mr. Rumsfeld appearing there and them bowing down to him, oh, thanking him so much for coming, you know, same old, same old. We have Mary Landrieu, who's the senior senator from Louisiana, who couldn't get enough press time. There was never a camera she didn't like. And then her junior senator, it looked like he was going to be ill every time she was on because he didn't get as much press. But the only thing that we really hear from there that I feel like is true is when people actually come back into the city from being down there and report to us that it's just beyond description, and they haven't even started yet, in that so many surrounding areas are still way underwater. The mayor in New Orleans was indicating that he knew it was going to take at least two more months to get the water out of New Orleans.
And then I saw a thing on CNN today, and who is the, maybe it's the mayor. Is he a black man?
Yes, he is.
Okay. He said that they had this plan to dredge the water. Are you there, honey?
Yes.
Okay, I just heard it quick. I thought I lost you. He said that they had a plan to dredge the water, and they had these big pipes, 48-inch pipes, they were going to put over the levee, and they were going to literally suction the water. And he said that within 2 to 3 weeks, he felt that most of the water would be gone out of there. We'll see, huh?
Yeah, well, it was the very same person that I just read an article by who said he thought it would probably take 2 months to get all of the water out. He has been very active here. He's been so frustrated, and especially when he hears things about, you know, 59 deaths, and he says that there are literally thousands of people under there dead.
Is that what the news is reporting?
Well, you know, they're starting to come around a little bit more. But even last night when I was watching CNN, you know, the little blips that go along the bottom of the screen.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
With you, it was 59 dead from Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, my God.
You know, Jackie, we're not going to hear half of the truth ever.
I know, but you know the thing... The thing that was confusing me, Julia, was that because CNN is the only news station I get here. I have C-band satellite.
Mm-hmm.
And they were telling it all. And the announcers were acting so frustrated and angry and said, why? Where is the help? And one of the women said, doesn't the Secretary of Homeland Security have the authority just to say to the military, we need help and we need it now? And why are these people just being left without food and water? So you see, and you all have probably been so busy, you haven't watched a lot of it. I haven't watched a lot of it, but what I've seen with the confusion was that they were shouting about the ineptitude. And Rush Limbaugh, I was in my car the other day, and I turned on Rush Limbaugh. He was bashing Bush, and he was bashing the administration and the, you know, where are they, and don't tell me that they couldn't have been dropping food from helicopters, and what is going on here. What you see looking in from outside, Julia, is that they are creating a rage within the people. And in fact, Alan and I were talking about this. It occurred to me that because they had a senator, maybe it was your, what's her name, Mary Landers?
Landrew.
Okay. Maybe it was on Rush Limbaugh. I heard her. She said, if this had happened in a wealthy district, people would never have been left without food and water. They would have been airlifted out of there. And so, of course, what she's talking about is a racism, okay? And it occurred to me that blacks all over this country are going to be absolutely furious, and they'll be very susceptible to an orchestrated outburst, a riot. That the possibility is that riots will start breaking out around this country because of what the news is doing and saying.
Well, of course, Jesse Jackson already showed his face around in the pier, and, you know, pretty much the same old with him. Everything's racial. And you were talking about food being dropped, Jackie. I was talking to a gentleman in a restaurant last night, and just I had overheard his conversation, and I asked him to tell me in a nutshell what he thought the biggest problem was. And of course, he wasn't the least bit bashful, and not if this was one of the problems, but he said it was so strange to him that you had one of the hospitals had 1,100 patients in it, and that the helicopters dropped 30 gallons of water. I imagine 1,100 patients, but 30 gallons of water.
Was that the charity hospital?
Yes.
Yeah.
30 gallons of water.
Yeah.
Now, I started to do the math on it today, but it slipped my mind and I didn't do it. But that is, that's absurd.
Right. And then I saw a CNN interview one of the rescue team, the emergency rescue team. And,
yeah.
See, I can sense the outrage that they're causing, Julia, because this guy was saying, well, they made us stand back. Because they didn't have protection, you know, they didn't have guns and protection from the criminal element. He said one of the homes we went into, there were 15 people in it, stranded, without water, without electricity, and he said there are hundreds more like that, and they won't even let us go in and help them. And then, of course, the news commentator said they don't want to put the rescue people in harm's way, and they're waiting, you know, for help, for protection. And meantime, all of the protection was waiting in Baton Rouge to get orders from Homeland Security Czar, the Israeli American dual citizen, Michael Chertoff.
Oh, that's true.
Okay.
Every word is true.
All right, we have to take a break here. We will be back right after.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry about that pause. I had to leave the mic for a few, about a minute and a half. We're going to open the phone lines here. Our guest tonight is Julia Womack from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And if any of you who are in the area would like to call in, if you have any personal accounts of what is going on there, it's 570-537-3025. 570-537-3025.
I would like to, if we have a minute here, Jackie, I'd like to share with you.
Caller, would you hold on for a moment?
Sure.
Thank you. Go ahead, Julia.
I would like to share with you one of the saddest things that I saw and I heard. I heard of the rescue of a little boy who was up on a roof, and they asked him about his mother and father, and he said, my mom and dad flew away.
I know, but I can't play it because 7 seconds of
my mom and dad flew away?
Yes, they were swept away by the wind and the rain. My mom, and can you imagine?
That would be multiplied time after time after time. We have a caller here. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Jackie, how you doing?
Hi, Noel.
Yeah, no, from New Orleans.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's good. I've been going through some stuff, but this is the...
Okay, now, you're from New Orleans?
Yeah, well, I live in Destrehan, which is a suburb.
Okay.
And what I'm calling about is that I have nephews and nieces who are in the fishing community down in St. Bernard Parish in Plaquemines.
Is that in New Orleans?
No, that's actually where the Eye of the Storm passed over.
Okay.
And it's probably about 15, 20 miles east of New Orleans,
okay.
Not west of New Orleans.
Okay.
And most people from New Orleans years ago, they kind of moved into the suburbs. They went to these little cities, Araby, and like my nephews and niece, they're from Violet, and he's a fisherman. And his story is really, I mean, they didn't even cover these areas. You never heard any kind of information. The people, what they're going through. Actually, what he thinks, and his name's David Lorente, and they think they blew up the levee because it's lower than New Orleans to save New Orleans.
I think they blew it up too, no.
But George Bush said that he did. My niece reported it. But this kid, well, I shouldn't say this kid, this man swam. His water came in so quick. He swam over a couple of blocks in 140-mile-an-hour winds. Got over to his mom's house, almost drowned in underneath the carport where the air pocket just disappeared quickly. Got into the house and into the attic. He had to swim from the attic, so couldn't find his parents. Then he swam to his boat. And his wife is, who's my
See, wait, wait, whoa. He swam to his boat?
There's the Violet Canal, which is just another maybe half a block from
his house. Oh, he swam to his...
It's a double-wide oyster boat.
Okay. But it wasn't his boat. It was the relative's boat.
Actually, it was a friend's boat, but he swam to a
boat,
and he has a boat.
Because he couldn't find anybody in the house.
No, what happened was they got a call saying that the water was rising, and within that quick of a time, they left. Now, all these people have boats, and they live near a canal, and they can get right to the boat.
Okay.
So what happened was they came back and picked up my niece. His dad did, not him. Dad came back and picked up my niece where they had 130-mile-an-hour winds in a flatboat, and they'd been pelted by hail. And they get them to this shrimp boat called the Lady Bird. Maybe I should have them talk to you, and they could tell you the whole story. It is absolutely wild. There's bodies floating in the water. This isn't reported on the news. And then they get onto this boat called the Lady Vera. I know there's a man by the name of Ricky Robin. He went back and he took this flatboat, was picking up quite a bit of, I don't know how many people, maybe 20, 30 different people he saved their lives. But nobody, this is a story you don't hear.
I know.
And then the kicker is that these people, you know, I don't know how much longer after, you know, maybe the day after it all calmed down, there's no help. Locals try to go in there to help these people, and they're being turned away by local sheriffs, saying that it's a FEMA problem. So, anyway.
Say where this is again, Noel.
They were being turned away. I mean.
Yeah, I know, but what is the location again?
Oh, it's St. Bernard Parish and Plaquemine Parish, but it's Violet, Louisiana.
So it's outside of New Orleans.
A suburb.
And the sheriff was turning away.
Well, maybe not sheriff, but the, you know, I don't know if it was state troopers and all, but people were trying to go in to help, and they wouldn't let them in.
Because they said it was a FEMA problem.
Yeah, well, I'm paraphrasing.
Okay.
But I'm just saying that, I mean, that's the what you get from everybody else, that FEMA wanted to control of it.
Yes, and I heard about FEMA literally turning away bus after bus that was coming in to pick up and evacuate the people. Because, see, FEMA has to control, Noel. You hear what I'm saying?
Right. Well, they manage.
That's
what they call they manage.
Yeah,
they control for a reason. That's what I want to get to, too, but I'm sorry.
Well, you go right ahead.
Well, you know, I have a book called The Trilateral Commission, World Planning for World Management, and they talking about managing this global... this global paradise they're going to build, you know. And what bothers me is that I'm wondering if they are trying to force people out and make them angry with the government, not wanting to come back and rebuild. And then they could move in immigrants, set up... this may sound a little far-fetched, but, I mean, the government is now not a government to protect the people. It's almost to the point where they have an agenda where they want to manage a society to make it better for them, I guess, you know. Does that sound far-fetched to you? Do they have people who are investors and they're trying to get people to move out and they'll drop the prices of the real estate and come in and buy a lot of it and then when it goes back up, make money? I don't know.
Maybe they won't rebuild at all, Noel. Maybe they'll turn it into one of their... wildlife habitats. Alan and I... Alan will be back with us tomorrow night. We've had a lot of conversation about this off air.
Whatever's going to happen, you're going to see it down the line, what they're going to do. But I know there's a lot of people. My nephew and his wife, my niece, and my sister-in-law, they said they're out of here. They're going to, you know, wherever their dream spot is.
Okay, something that... I don't know if you know anything about this or if you've talked to anybody about it, but I've talked to the FEMA flood insurance department.
Right.
And people who own their property, if there's a mortgage on it, it's mandatory that they carry flood insurance through FEMA. And if they don't buy it, then the mortgage holder buys it, which the woman informed me was at least three times higher. And
so they become the legal owners, the mortgage company?
Well, they're the legal owners anyway, Noel.
Oh, that's true.
Okay. And then, of course, well, that's another story. Even if you don't have a mortgage, don't pay your taxes.
The Federal Reserve.
Yeah, and you lose your home. But the newspaper article I have regarding flooding from North Carolina several years ago, that FEMA, I forget how many hundreds of millions of dollars it cost, they would rebuild for the people, but not if the people didn't move, and in other words, didn't relocate.
Right.
So in other words, it appears to me that the plan is to relocate people away from the water.
Right.
And they create the floods. We know that this hurricane...
But you have HOMP, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, you can get on their website, they'll tell you that they... You can type it on the search engine on the Internet.
So my question is, if there was anybody, if there is anybody who owns property in Louisiana... And Noel, if you hear about this, I'd like to hear about it.
Okay.
On a really, you know, person-to-person basis, that they want to rebuild, and FEMA tells them that they have to relocate.
Right.
Because this is what I have read.
Right. Is that the National Flood?
FEMA.
Is that through FEMA?
In other words, the only flood insurance
federal,
that
your
insurance companies do not cover floods.
Right. We
okay.
Go through it. I guess it's FEMA. I thought it was a national, but I never didn't realize.
FEMA. It's FEMA, honey. They advertised this for a long time on the Weather Channel, and every time I heard it, it, you know, made my blood start to boil. And one day I called the 800 number.
Yeah.
And I talked to the lady there. She said it's mandatory. And I asked her, well, what if you don't have a mortgage? Is it a law? And she was silent for a few seconds, the pregnant pause. And she said, well, you would be a fool not to have flood insurance.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I said, well, I'm up here 1,800 feet. She said, but you don't understand. We have been having flooding that in places that haven't flooded since Noah's Ark.
Mm. Yeah.
So the entire planet is now graded as a floodplain. And even at the highest peak of the highest mountain in this country, they grade it at the lowest level, a low risk. But there isn't a place on this planet, Noel, that isn't graded as a floodplain.
Right. I mean, they make them money.
So if you find out anything about this,
well,
would you...
I want to talk just one more thing about the break, and I will. I'm going to look into that. My wheels are turning. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's all right. Go ahead.
The break in the levee, they talked about Backdoor and Bethy. Now, Backdoor and Bethy was a smaller area, but you had people that came all over from the surrounding parishes with boats, and they got these people within a day and a half, these people were rescued. And that's what they were hoping down here.
Is that where the levee broke?
Levee broke. Now, they came out, you know, and it kind of kept quiet that the levee was blown up, was dynamited to protect, to keep the French Quarter, New Orleans from flood. And it would hit articles in the paper. There was an article in the paper
about two years ago. And the French Quarter didn't flood, did it?
It didn't flood. You know, but then they had a Corps of Engineers, the head of the Corps of Engineers was on a talk radio show, and I'm asking him, he just kind of got quiet. He says, oh, I'd have never heard that at all. So it was in the newspaper about 2 months ago. But, you know, my niece told me, she said, Bush said it. She wrote down a date, the 31st, which was on a Wednesday. He said on TV that we tried to dynamite the levee, or we blew up the levee to try to keep New Orleans from flood. Which, the levee is, right near the Industrial Canal, by the Orleans Parish line, and that, you know, by doing that, it flooded all down toward the lower sea level. The
lower, okay.
It's lower on that side compared to New Orleans.
In other words, they made it flood.
They made it flood.
Where the depressed, oppressed areas were.
Yeah, somewhat. And then you have about, right near the Industrial Canal, you might have about 6-7 miles. And it's the old New Orleans neighborhood. In fact, I was born around that area.
Uh-huh.
To ride to the French Quarter when I was a kid. And, but that now is pretty much minorities. And then, but you know, then you have all the people in Chalmette and Arabie. So, but I don't know if it, you know, evidently, I think it might have been in the same place that they did it last time. I don't know. That'd be something that I should check on that.
What do you mean with that they did what last time?
Well, I was doing Bessie. When where the levee they said broke, and then people got wind that the levee was blown up in Chalmette. Now, that area back then was basically all white. It was pretty much all white. And that was, you know, back in 65.
Uh-huh.
But it was the same thing. The levee broke, and these people down in Araby and that lower part of New Orleans got flooded, you know. So anyway.
So where you are, it's okay.
Yeah, we, you know, I'm in a the neighborhood in an upscale subdivision, and they have a few of the Saints football players live out here. They used to live out here. Home Village used to live out here, and it's, they pretty much built the levee around this area, and then they just finished the levee system, so it worked because we didn't flood, and it was just so nice. And these people in New Orleans and these other areas, but what bothered me too, they never covered St. Bernard, Plaquemines Parish. They never could cover these. They just basically covered New Orleans, you know, and on the radio. You never heard any of that. Like this story I heard from my nephew. And what bothered him big time was the bodies he saw floating in the water.
And Julia said,
huh?
That Julia, our guest tonight,
uh-huh,
said that she saw a scroll, you know the way they scroll under the news?
Yeah.
That there are 59 dead.
In New Orleans, huh?
59 dead as a result of Katrina so far.
I don't know why they did that. They
oh, sure, you know.
About that on WWL radio, and the count was already up to about 8,500, and they just thought it was a mistake on the radio, but is that just a way of...
No, that's what... I'll tell you what it is. It's a way to erase people's memories.
Right.
And down the road, people will say, oh, well, only 59 people died.
It,
no,
it
like...
the seed of...
yeah, exactly. They're telling people what they think.
I bet you before it's all over, you're going to have 30,000, 35,000.
Oh, probably more than that.
Yeah.
Probably more than that. 911, the World Trade Center, they said 2,700 people died.
Right.
The count would realistically be closer to 40,000 people, no.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the death count in the Iraqi war,
yeah,
of the young men and women that are going over there being used as cannon fodder.
I don't think we have the troops they said we have. And plus, I saw that...
No, honey, I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
And thank you very much for your call
tonight. Thank you. If you want, I can get my niece to call you in if you want to hear her account. She's more articulate than me. She could probably tell it, you know. But it's after hearing that story, it was
yeah,
surreal.
Well, that's exactly what it does. It brings it into focus.
It does.
Of the individuals that have lived through this.
Well, after hearing it on the media and these people's stories and hearing that story, it was just, you know, it was,
yeah,
it really made me shake. And
thank you, Noel.
Nice talk.
Good night, honey.
Okay.
Folks, if there's anybody that would like to call in, 570-537-3025. 570-537-3025. Julia?
Yes, he said something really interesting, if it's okay if I expound
please,
on it.
Please,
In his, we talk about New Orleans and, you know, the play down on, well, whether it should be rebuilt or whatever. Well, you know, what about Miami? Miami's been almost blown off the map several times. They've never said anything about that. Or how about L.A. when they have these big earthquakes? You never hear anyone say anything about, you know, they're not worth saving. They're living there on a fault. They should move, blah, blah, blah. But let's get down to New Orleans here itself. New Orleans has the largest port in the United States in terms of tonnage. It has the fifth largest in the world in terms of tonnage.
Are you talking,
they will.
Are you talking imports?
Imports, exports.
Okay.
Okay. They will have to rebuild New Orleans. Now, simply because it's so necessary. We have to get the food and the products, the steel, in and out of this country. It comes in, it comes through the ports. The big ships cannot go any further than Baton Rouge. The bridge, they cannot go any further. Okay. So New Orleans is the port. And then I was just thinking of what he was talking about, where we're left with a short labor force. And if anyone has, which most people haven't, read anything about this CAFTA, how these foreign countries can now bring in their entire workforces. They can house them. So we can actually have a foreign country come in here, run our ports, run the cities with their own slave labor camps, and we can't do a thing about it. Now, I know that sounds like off the deep end.
No, it doesn't.
But
no,
it's a possibility.
No, it doesn't sound like off the deep end, Julia.
And they certainly, there's nothing to keep them from doing it. So then they can bring these people in here. They won't pay taxes. And we'll supply them with free medical aid. Schools, housing.
Do you have friends in New Orleans?
I actually can't say that I do have good friends in New Orleans. I have some acquaintances,
I would be very interested in finding out what happens with their flood insurance.
Okay. I do have some friends out of Slidell, though. Now, Slidell has lost 90% of their property. So
okay.
I am really interested in hearing what happens in their claim.
And you'll let us know.
I sure will.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is a when he was talking about his nephew's, I think he said his nephew's experience, this is one individual, and you multiply that, you know, thousands and thousands of times, there is a danger of becoming desensitized so that what we're hearing, we hear it, but we don't feel it. And I think this is important, Julia, for us to hear firsthand accounts of people's experiences, to get it under the microscope, if you would, so that we don't become desensitized to the evil that is present. Because I am clear, I don't have a doubt that this entire happenstance was not a happenstance. This occurrence was very well planned, including the direction that the hurricane took, the force of the hurricane, the breaking of the dike. I don't have a doubt in my mind that all of it, because they're killing so many birds with one stone here. It literally has become a military operation, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. You're right. We can't become desensitized. And as far as the news and everything is concerned, Jackie, and the few things that they show that are real, I feel quite sure that we see more of the actual truth around here than other people are seeing in other parts of the country.
Yes.
Simply because it's demanded. But, hey, it's so much simpler to switch that dial and watch a good old football game than to deal with the realities.
Or even to sit and watch it and without feeling, without experiencing it. Because,
sure.
You know, the compassion, the empathy, when we lose our empathy, when we lose our compassion, we're losing our souls. And they keep bombarding us with so many catastrophes and deaths and et cetera, that after a while, it's just numbers, Julia.
Sure.
It's just
and
numbers.
Then and then they start talking about things so much that then people just don't even want to hear about it anymore.
Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly. And maybe just one person's personal account of the horrendousness of it, maybe that's enough to bring it home to all of us that this is happening to humankind. It's happening to real, live, breathing, loving, people. And maybe not all of them so loving. But...
Well, I was watching TV today and heard the president of Jefferson Parish, Mr. Broussard, literally break down in tears. And he said that we've been abandoned by our own countrymen. Not just the storm that killed, but the bureaucracy needs to be investigated. The bureaucracy is really responsible for some of these deaths.
Okay.
Forget about the property. Just get it and save lives. Here it is, 8 days later, and help is just now on its way. All the way back to when FEMA turned back the water trucks, they turned back the diesel trucks. Sheriff Harry Lee down there, FEMA took over some of his communications, and he literally had his men to repair the lines and posted his armed guards around the communication centers, letting FEMA know that they would not touch his communication system.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, I
know. All he said is just shut up and send somebody down here to help.
That's what I'm talking about, Julia. And I'll bet there are hundreds of these types of experiences where people are, yeah, the frustration must be unbearable for people.
Well, I hope I never have to know that type of frustration or the pain that these people are going through.
Well, we should know it, honey. We should know it right now in our hearts and in our own center. That's what I'm talking about. You know, being desensitized is not feeling it, not experiencing it, so we can keep ourselves apart from it. But, you know, if you put yourself even in the place, think about the young man that Noel was talking about, swimming. I forget what did he say, a mile or whatever? And then he gets underneath the carport, and the air pocket is lost. He gets into the house, it's filled with water, and has to go up into the attic to get air. This has happened over and over and over and over and over again.
Well, certainly.
Yeah.
We've seen some rescues.
Yeah, Julia, we're out of our hour, honey, and thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
And I hope that you and Sid will keep in touch with me and let me know anything that comes up that you think we should share with our listeners.
We'll let you know, dear, anytime that we find out something, we'll call you during the daytime so
thank
you can share it with your people at night.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jackie.
All right, good night.
Good
ladies
night.
And gentlemen, we'll be back with you tomorrow night. Alan will be with us. Alan Watt will be with us. And thank you for being here.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial